So the question is asked to the, from the master, do you see God? Guru Nanak was asked, do you, is there God? Can he perceptible ever? No reason. Christ said, what? Behold the Lord. No reason. They see, they can make others see too. Kabir says, I was under a delusion when I saw his vision with my own eyes, now I am convinced that he is there. All the people at large are not convinced of the existence of God. Only such a man can be convinced who sees him. Those who do not see, they all let everything go on to their will and pleasure and to their betterment without their guide, God. When anything comes up very adverse, it's against God. So the Guru Nanak was asked, you see God with what eyes? And he said, it is not the eye that is made of flesh and bones, but that eye is different. With which you can see God. That is called diptyku, different eye, pure nature, single eye, or chasma bhatam, Persian philosophers say. So Samastha Brahis was asked, how can we see God? Can we see God? He says, yes, we should be able to see God with our own eye. And we should be able to hear his voice with our own ears. Then how? He said, when you close your eyes, there's darkness. Penetrate into the darkness and you'll find light there. The very darkness becomes luminous. The very sound, the silence of the heart, sound is proceeds their form. Very silence becomes vocal. Now who experiences this in that our soul? When it is withdrawn from the body and from all outside. So long as man does not know how to rise above this life of senses, he remains stranger to the other world and stranger to God and everyone. So we can't see him. The reason is that mind stands between us and God. Master says we have seen him in this man body. And why can't we say? Because he says mind stands between us and God. First thing is, you see, suppose there is a pond of water covered with wheat. If you want to see your face, what is it? if the water is taken off, all the wheat is taken off from the water, one little by little, and if the ripples are going on the water, they are stopped, then you can see your face within you. So this can be done only when you rise of body consciousness, not before. So they tell us, Master tell us, you have got the man body. Man body, highest aim in man body is to know God. If you have not known God, why you brag that you have got the man body? You are the master of all you survey. So that can be seen only when we learn how to come out of the man body. Modern room gives it. Prayer. He says, oh God, send us such like man who can take us out of the box of the man body. This effective demonstration required. One part is, three things are required. First, word guru. Guru means who can drive away the darkness from before us and manifest the light of God. Call him by any name you like. Word made light. Those with word made flesh can also give you contact with the word within us. Difference between average man and Master is that God is manifest in him, his word made flesh, that is also within us, but that is embedded, you see, latent. So what he does is he draws our attention from all outside and takes you above the body level and you see. So Master sees God everywhere. You see, Masters always, they give out the same key. Guru Nanak went to Mecca. There he was lying at midnight with his feet towards Mecca. The servants over there came up and rebuked him, "Well, why are you lying with your feet towards the house of God?" He politely answered, "Dear friend, I see God all around. If you think there's some side where God is not, you may turn away my feet there." Al-Nasai, and the Qur'an itself tells us, God is omniscient, He is everywhere. Wherever man gets time for prayers, all ground is holy, all is holy where devotion kneels. He is on all sides, whichever way you are sitting, sit down and stay there. So these are the awakened persons who have realized that thing, they say, that he can be realized is within man's body too. But for that, first thing required is a master, the second is true living. Truth is above all, and true living is still above truth. Ethical life is stepping stone to spirituality. And the third thing is, there are two kinds of knowledges. One the exotic side, the other the esoteric side. One is ilm-e sina, the other is called the ilm-e safina, and the para and apara. So apara are ilms which outward exotic knowledge relates to the outward faculties, mind or intellect. And saints give you a contact with that power which is at the back of all creation. You are not in the outer, in all religions they got their own rituals, customs, modes of prayers, giving models of the light of God and the sound principle of God by lighting candle and bell ringing. So those are called apra. Reading, writing, reciting, you see, praying, visiting the places of pilgrimages, and all the outer performance, they form the, come under the category of apra. And that what leads you from body above, gives a contact with the God, into a special power within you, that is called para. So these three things are, you know. But he says the world is not outside, outside also the whole world is the creation of God, that the house of God. But God is in the temple of the man body. He does not desire to tell us in the temples made by human hands. But he does desire in the temple made by him in the womb of the mother. So they tell, where is it? He says, he's actually the very body you are carrying. You are there and he is also there. And not that much, macrocosm is in the microcosm. There are worlds beyond. Only we have to rise above the first plane, physical, and ingress into the beyond. Master, those have traversed into the beyond, what they have seen, what they have experienced, they are given in the scriptures. So you'll find the right interpretation of the scriptures can be given only by someone who sees, who has experienced that thing. If you do it, express them at the level of intellect, you'll not be able to do full justice to the world. Some will say this, the other say. So Master says that he is within you. Why you wander in touch of him in outside. Kabir Sarapati says he went to pay pilgrimage to Mecca. On the way God met me, he says, he rebuked me, "Well, oh Kabir, why are you going? Who told you I'm there? I'm with you. Go with you. Step inside." So all masters say the same thing. So, he is with us always only who can see him, who sits at the feet of the master. And what does he say? He says, body is the biggest Veda, biggest Bible, biggest Quran, biggest scripture. Just read within your body. Just have such within your body. The masters who search within and transcended, they gave out in scriptures. If you also search within you, then you will also say the same, see the same things what are given in the scriptures, and you will be able to give the right interpretation of what is given there. Not that one, but you will also see those things with your own eyes. So every saint has his past, and every sinner future. Bulesha says, God is within me, He is never away from me, but that I am not open to see. You see? For that reason we are always in what you say, away from it. We feel separation, you see? We feel the agony of separation because we have not seen Him. Pity it is, He is within us, we are in the body, and we do not see Him. On the one bed, we are there and God is there, and we are sleeping from within, awakened outside, by our attention identified with the world outside. Although He is with us, never away from us, but we do not see Him. The Master gives God as a gift, excuse me for that. So all Master says, God resides in the cave of this man's body. You have to simply go within. This is the biggest Veda, biggest Granth, you see, and biggest Quran. Outer things are for our guidance, what the Master left for ourselves. But if we have to verify ourselves, then you have to go within and find Him. The question was asked by from Guru Arjan Dev. You say that God resides in the man's body. How can we find Him? What's the way to find Him? So he repeats, first thing required is someone who has unraveled the mystery of life himself, known himself, he has transcended into the inner planes, and transcended all planes, as macrocosm in the microcosm. Such a saint is required. That depends on the master, to whatever access he has got, he can only guide you up to that plane. If you meet someone who only goes into beyond, not further, then he can be able to give you, take you to the first plane, not beyond. That will access up to the second plane, he will take you up to the second plane. Who is an access up to the third plane, he will take you up to the third plane. You saw there is a reference given about jnana, that you were stuck fast in the third plane. You have got reference like that. But these are now explicitly given, you see references are there. But within the three planes, there danger coming, going, mind works there. The physical mind, and the astral mind, and the causal mind. Unless you rise about three levels, you are not safe. So Master says we should follow such a master who goes transcend these three planes into the beyond, first in the world. If he puts on the way and gives some demonstration how to rise from the physical body, that is the first step. All further things follow. Now you say what we are doing now, we are all following all practices, all of ways of worship at the sensual level, life of the sense. So we have to sacrifice life for that eternal life. Sacrifice does not mean to kill it, but to rise above it, you see. What does it profit a man if he gains the possessions of the whole world but loses one's own soul? Remain where you are in whatever social society you are living in. You are made with a very noble purpose to enable many people to derive this benefit. This started only when the Master left the scene, left the earth, to keep their teachings alive. As long as their practical people, the people had the benefit. When time passed on, for want of practical people, the same good formation which was made with a very noble purpose, they dwindled down into stagnation, and stagnation results in deterioration. Master again come to take us out of this delusion. So first thing, Guru Arjan says, they require such a master to go beyond all three planes. And he gives us his interest. And the question comes, what sort of teaching they give us? So he says, the God is within you. Unless you rise above the outgoing faculty, you cannot see. You see? This is the first time. We are under a grand delusion. This delusion starts from man's body. We are the indweller of the man's body. We are identified with the body so much so that we cannot differentiate ourselves from the bad one. The body is made of matter which is changing every moment of life. And the world around us is also made of matter, changing at the same speed as our body is changing. As two things are changing, we are identified with them, they seem to be stationary. It is optical illusion. So Master first advised how to rise above this man body, prison house of the man body, to be reborn, to be twice born. Learn to die so that you may begin to live. So first is, they give such like teaching, paravidya. Then make the best use of the aparavidya, outward. That's only meant for the preparation of the ground. That is not true worship. True worship, as I told you, is to come in contact with the light within you, by opening your inner eye. And open your inner ear, you begin to hear the Kalami Karim, our music of the spheres. Aristotle said he heard a voice which dragged him into the beyond, into new world. Pythagoras said that the sound harmony of all harmonies could flow in light. Pythagoras, Aristotle, and also, what they called Zoroaster, also referred to that, unstuck fire. That their own words meant for that, and Sroja. All other masters say the same. Buddha also referred to that. So this is the ancient wisdom which you have forgotten. Basic teachings of all religions, for want of practical, we have forgotten. Now, first thing is rise above body consciousness. We have got ego of the mind. Really we have the body, we are not the body, but we are working at the level of the body, which is changing. It's a grand delusion, an optical illusion. So Master gave us a boost, demonstration, how to rise above body consciousness. When you have got a stage there, then your whole angle of vision is changed. This body is the first companion that comes along with us in the world, but does not go along with us when we leave the world. How can you ever dream that those things which have come in our contact, being in the body, they will go along with us? That is why Christ says, it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a holy man. So first thing I tell you is just come out of delusion. As to see God in love, that love is innate in us too, because we are conscious beings, and love knows attaching to outside things, what is before us. This love should have been of the conscious self, the over-self, all consciousness. Because we have not seen him, seen that we are attached to the world outside, which is called attachment. We go where we are attached. With the master grace, if you come in contact with that thought into special power, then naturally where will go? Where that light will come, guide us, and sound will direct us. So this is a delusion in which you are. Master's work is to take you of this delusion by giving a demonstration. To rise above body consciousness from day to day, when you daily rise, this is dying daily. Saint Paul said, I die daily. Those who know how to leave the body daily, well, there is no sting of death left. Oh, death, where is thy sting? They have victory over death, because they know how to leave the body. So he says, when you find you are also in the body, and whom you want to meet, he is also in the same body. Both are in the same body, which is the true temple of God. And staying in us, we do not talk to him. The reason why? The outer expression of the soul is called attention, that is identified with the body and all outside things. Identified, we cannot differentiate ourselves. The first step is to take you up. Your angle of vision will change. If you day to day follow that thing, then you are in the world, yet not in the world, you see. Because you have risen above the outgoing faculties, and through the outgoing faculties, only outer impressions come within us. 80% of the impressions of the world outside come through eyes. 14 from the air, and the rest from the outgoing faculties. When you rise above, this is the place. All of the faculties remain below. When you got a footing there, then you have to make the use of the outgoing faculty as you want. What is different between such a person and ourselves is that we are dragged by the outgoing faculty like anything. And they make only the best use of the outgoing faculty which they want to do. This is first time what the Master gives us, a control of the outgoing faculty. How? By raising us above body consciousness and giving contact with the light and sound principle of God which is within us. When you got a footing there, then you can use your outgoing faculty as your backing source. Then further starts, you see, when the world flaps its hand, there the religion starts. Religion reaches its back, leads you to bind. To bind back your soul to God. Yoga also means the same thing. That comes from the root yuj, means united with God. So this is natural way out of all the yoga we have got at our time. This attention sutra, the yoga of the attention is the quickest, easiest and most natural way which even a child and young and old can do it. Only that requires first day some demonstration how to rise above body consciousness, some capital to start with. Then you have to dwell further by to living and keeping his commandments. So as we, you see, we do not rise above the outward faculty, these five desires attack us. Lust. Lust attacks to the eyes. You see? Ear is flared up, anger is flared up by hearing. The more ear, the more anger is flared up. So more tasteful things wants man, mind wants. The more you give it, the more it wants. But the taste. And other outgoing factors. You give above it, then these all things remain below. You, on account of you alone, these outgoing faculties work. I think you might have got an experience of this in your life. When you are sitting in some, attention is absorbed in something, somebody calls you once, twice, thrice, you do not hear. That man comes up to you, dear friend, I have called you so many times, why don't you reply? You say, my attention was just somewhere else. So, so long as our attention is not to the ears, ears don't work. Similarly, you are absorbed in some thought, eyes are open, somebody passes by you, you do not recognize. Is it right? Because attention is not there. So it is we who have ruled the body and the outward faculty. And we are controlled by some higher power. So body is the true temple of God. Now, by giving an outer example, when a man has built one home, some house, building, he has made it, he locked it up. So someone meant to take that house to live in. What is required? First to have the sanction of the master, owner of the house. When he sanctions, he gives to his servant, all right, go and open the door, give it to him. This is the outward expression. This body was made by whom? By God, in the womb of the mother. He locked it up and gave key to a word made flesh. There is servant, you see. And that sanction of God is required. God into expression power. He gives, when he agrees, he gives consent, then he makes him contact with somebody who is a word made flesh. He opens the door and then enters. They break the shield of the eyes and the eyes, you see. We begin to see and we begin to hear. So the only way up is what? If God wants to bring back any child home, first thing what he gives is the company of the saints. This is only having God the saints' grace. And what they do? They open our eyes, see the light of God, and hear the voice of God. We take it back to the source from where it emanated, the world state. This is the way. And sometimes we ask the masters themselves, have you seen, have you got out of this delusion? They do have. They say, yes, with the grace of God and the Guru with me, I have seen, I have come out of this illusion, and I see my soul is being united with God. So all scriptures are full of these things. The only thing required is some practical man who can give us a contact with that. He is a link between the man and God. Remain where you are in any social body you are in. Master, do not touch them. They come to fulfill, not to destroy. So man is a social being, he must have some social body to live in. There are already more than 700 social bodies in the world. So master comes at such a mind, such a time when there are so many social bodies there. They say, all right, remain where you are, but look to your own self. You are the indweller of the body. God is controlling the body. The body you are having is the true temple of God. Outer temples were made after the model of man body. Dome shaped, long nose shaped chassis, mask, forehead shaped and all, wherein you will find the two symbols of God, light and sound. So who is the better of all these things? These are symbols. Giving all men in those particular religions outer symbols of God in the man body to understand for the beginner. He says, what is the best of all? He says, where this light and sound is effulgent. That is best of all, he says. And that is the true worship of God. And this is what the Master gave us to start. Sativedi is how to say. So what is required of us is to keep his commandments and have his true life. And love and devotion also, I was talking about that thing. By word of mouth you have one third of the teachings and two thirds by dirt and receptivity. That is the result of love and devotion. So this is God we worship and all what is worshiping. This is grace of God when he comes, brings us in contact with some such person in whom he is manifest, he can give you contact with God within you.
Good morning and welcome to the satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you just heard was the last 30 minutes of the talk called Naam Bhakti, given on 9th November 1972 in Vancouver. Our reader this morning is Scott Stewart. Hello, Scott.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Master's Satsang. I will continue reading from Master's great work about the life and teachings of Baba Jaimal Singh. I will pick up where I left off. Another disciple, Baba Jaimal Singh Ji, one of the earliest and most spiritually advanced disciples of Swami Ji, as directed by the great master himself, settled down at Bayaz in the Punjab to revitalize the work of spirituality and repay, to some measure, the debt that the world owed to Guru Nanak. We will now examine in some detail the life and work of this distinguished spiritual son of Swami Ji. Part 2, Babaji, A Brief Biography, Early Years. It was in 1838 that Baba Jaimal Singh was born in the village of Guman in the Gurdaspur district of the Punjab to a family of pious Sikh cultivators. Guman was as any other village in the region. If it was distinguished in any way by its having a shrine known as Dera Baba Namdev in memory of the great sage Namdev, who, many years earlier, had spent his last days there. Legend holds that when the saint arrived and wished to pray inside the local temple, he was refused admission because he was an outcast. Undeterred, he went and sat down behind the back wall and was soon lost in samadhi. The Lord, unhappy at the insult, offered his disciple, turn the face of the temple toward the place where Namdev sat, and all the priests and Brahmins fell at his feet asking for forgiveness. It is from that day that the local village is said to have taken the name Guman, a Punjabi word signifying to turn around. The village folk visited the shrine to offer devotion, and many a wandering sadhu often came there to pay his homage to the great sage. Bhai Jod Singh and Bibi Daya Kaur, the parents of Jaimal, were frequent visitors, and the latter, while there, would often pray for a saintly son. Great souls seldom unannounced, and one night, Bibi Daya Kaur was visited by the great Namdev in a dream, who told her that her prayers were granted, and 10 months later, Jaimal was born amidst domestic festivity and rejoicing. The history of a saint is the history of a soul's pilgrimage. It is a story which, to be spiritually complete, covers innumerable years and countless lives. The final enlightenment may seem sudden, but its preparatory stages are long and arduous. Like Buddha and Jesus, Jaimal showed remarkable spiritual precocity from a very early age when visiting the shrine of Baba Namdev with his parents. Unlike other children of his age, he would sit calm and attentive, and even as a child of 3, he could repeat many of the verses he heard at spiritual discourses. The villagers wondered at his prodigiousness. He was soon nicknamed Bal Sadhu, or Child Saint, and his rural admirers pressed his parents to give him an opportunity for education. So when Jaimal was 5, he was put in charge of Bhai Kem Das, a learned Vedantist who lived close by. In those times, education in India did not concern itself with training for a vocation. It was preeminently a mental and spiritual discipline based on the study of the scriptures. The young child displayed keen aptitude for it and soon mastered the Gurmukhi script. Within a year, he had already read carefully the Punj Granthi, or 5 basic Sikh scriptures, including the Japji, the Sukhmani Sahib, and Rao Ras. In another 6 months, he had the key passages of these spiritual treasures by heart, and by the age of 7, he had grown into an excellent pati, or one who could recite the scriptures in a melodious way with professional mastery. The next year was spent in studying the Dasam Granth, the scriptures compiled by the last of the Sikh gurus. Jaimal showed great respect for his teacher, who was delighted with the boy's application and rapid progress. The two would spend long hours together, and the lad would hear Bhai Kem Das with a great attention. His hunger for knowledge was insatiable, and the reading of scriptures only fired his imagination still further. One day, picking up the Japji, he began reciting the 20th stanza, and after finishing the recitation, turned to his teacher and asked, "Sir, what is the meaning of Nam, of which Nanak has said, when one's mind is defiled by sin, it can be cleansed only by communion with Nam, and of which all the other great ones have sung such praises in the rest of the Granth Sahib?" Kim Das was touched by his pupil's questioning spirit and discrimination, but was unable to enlighten him on the subject as he himself was not conversant with the mystery of Nam. A day later, Bhai Jodh Singh, seeing that his son, now 8, was old enough to help him, went to his guru with an offering of a silver rupee and jaggery in traditional style. After laying it at his feet, he expressed his desire to have Jaimo released from his studies in order to attend his flock of goats. Kim Das raised no objection. "He is your son, and you may dispose of him as you consider best." But his young ward could not wish him farewell so easily. "Sir," he assured him, "I shall work for my father all day, but in the evening I shall come to you and continue the studies." Jamal proved true to his word and kept unbroken his association with his learned teacher. Proud of his perseverance and piety, Kim Das initiated him soon after into the Japa of Sohang, which he himself practiced. The boy would get up long before daybreak, have his bath, read the scriptures, and sit for meditation. He would then lead his goats into the fields. His young friends soon observed that while the goats grazed over the meadows, he did not hang around idly looking on, but kept reading and reciting holy texts and often sat down cross-legged for meditation. At sundown, he would return with his herd, have some milk and food, and then proceed to his guru. There he would sit attentively, learning how to read and interpret the scriptures. After he had mastered the Granth Sahib, he began, at the age of 9, the study of Hindi and the Hindu texts. Studies over, he would visit the shrine of Namdev and return home late at night. Often while away in the evening, he would sit down and be lost in meditation. So much so that once he was away for the whole night, while his parents searched frantically every part of the village in vain. This intense application did not go unrewarded, and the boy once told his teachers that he could see stars and moon within and glimpse inner light, the first spiritual experience of the mystic soul. Bhai Jodh Singh was far from satisfied with his eldest son's unworldly ways. However, religious-minded a man may be, he is seldom happy to see his son turned a renunciate. Jamal was growing up, but instead of showing any interest in family affairs, he was moving in the opposite direction. He not only spent a great deal of his time reading scriptures, practicing spiritual sadhanas, and visiting his teacher, Bhai Kim Das, but also began passing long hours in the company of the sadhus and holy men who came to the village to pay homage to the shrine of Namdev. Wishing to curb his son's inordinate religious inclination, his father thought it best to send him away from Guman and its visiting sadhus. So at the age of 11 years and 8 months, Jamal was sent off with his flock to the home of one of his two sisters, Bibi Tabo, who lived in the village of Satiala. At his sister's, Jamal continued his old schedule of religious practices and goat grazing. Many a month passed away in this uneventful manner. Then one day, while following his herd, he met a yogi who had just arrived at the village. Happy to find the company of the holy, he bowed in reverence, milked his goats, and offered the yogi a drink of milk. The man, in saffron, was touched by the lad's piety and began to question him. Jamal told him of the scriptures he had read and the intense desire for enlightenment they had sparked in him. The sadhu was very pleased by the account and offered to train him. He told him frankly that as regards the mystique of Nam, he knew little, but whatever he himself practiced, he would freely impart. So next morning, as instructed, Jamal proceeded without having eaten anything to his newly discovered guide for initiation. The yogi was an adept in pranayama and instructed his young disciple into its secrets. Having found a spiritual guide, Jamal was once again lost to the world. His old holy indifference to family ties and worldly affairs returned. If anything, with redoubled intensity, he would often sit for 3 hours at a stretch in meditation. The yogi, pleased by his devotion, stayed on in the village, and Jamal was more often than not to be found in his company. The developments caused his sister much concern, and anxiety finally drove her to send word to her father to take the boy away. Bhai Jodh Singh soon arrived on the scene and ordered his son back home. The two set out homeward early next morning, but while they were on the point of leaving the village, Jamal, his eyes moist with tears, begged his father to permit him to see the yogi for the last time and bid him farewell. His father agreed, and the boy, with an offering of fresh milk, hurried to his preceptor. He sadly related how his father had arrived and of their intended departure that day. The yogi smiled, blessed him, and bade him be of good cheer. Continue your sadhans at home as before, he said, and all will be well. I myself shall see you there someday. At Guman, Jamal revived his association with Bhai Kim Das and continued to greet visiting sadhus as of yore. He was now in his 14th year and continued an unmitigated zeal, the practice of sadhanas he had learned. But he soon began to hunger for more. The yogic practices he had mastered failed to satisfy him, and on reading the Granth Sahib, he became convinced of a higher reality to be attained by different means. As he progressed on the path, he became progressively more detached from the world. He noted all the esoteric hints and references to the five-worded word, the Panch Shabd, to be found in the six scriptures, and kept pondering over them, asking every new yogi or sadhu he met if he could explain them to him, but all in vain. At this stage of his search, he and his family suffered a sad bereavement. He was not yet 14 when his father fell ill and died. The family was grief-stricken, but Jamal's spiritual discipline worked as a protective shield. Quoting from the scriptures, he comforted his mother and his two younger brothers, and discouraged any weeping or wailing. If the soul was deathless, and if all was according to the Lord's will, then why any mourning? The Great Search. Had Jamal's interest in spirituality been only a seed cast on rock or sand or a sapling, yet tender in its fiber? Had it been no more than the mere curiosity or the spontaneous piety of a simple village lad, the passing away of his father would have rung the death knell of his quest. As the eldest male member of the family, the burden of domestic responsibilities fell on his shoulders. And perhaps more souls are lost to heaven by the sense of duty to earth than by downright sin and evil. But Jamal's urge was a plant of tougher roots and stronger fiber. Undaunted and unmoved, he divided the outdoor duties among his brothers, kept his old exacting routine, and in 6 months' time mastered the yoga, Vaishishta and Vichar Sangre, two standard works of Hindu theology. There arrived in the village about this time a sadhu of the Udasi sect. As was his wont, Jamal went to see him and inquired of him the meaning of passages he had noted down from the Granth Sahib. The sadhu explained that he could initiate him into at least the mystery of the Gaur Anhat, or deep reverberating sound referred to in the six scriptures, if not into that of the Panch Shabd. Jamal, keen to learn whatever he could, offered himself as a disciple. But the Diwali festival was at hand, and his new teacher wanted to celebrate it at Amritsar. Reluctant to miss this opportunity, Jamal went to his mother and begged her to allow him to join the sadhu and go forth on his quest for truth. But Bibi Daya had to see to the welfare of the family and would not hear of her eldest son going away. She reminded him of his duties. "Your father is no more," she said, "and you must carry on his place. If you are gone, what will become of us?" "I am not insensitive to what you say, my dear mother," replied her son, "but the Lord is above us, and he who sustains his creatures even on the rocks and in the sea will not forsake us in our need. Man's primary duty is to seek his Creator, and all other duties are secondary. Be not afraid, but be of good cheer, and let me proceed with your blessings." D. deeply religious herself, Bibi Daya was touched by what Jamal said with such conviction. Seeing his determination and being too fond of him to break his heart, she at last relented. I know I cannot stop you, nor do I wish to do so. But if you must go, promise to return home when your quest is over. Giving his word of honor, Jamal departed, and his mother and brothers bade him a tearful farewell. He had hardly entered his 15th year, and he was already embarked on a quest that was to carry him through many cities and was to involve him in great toil and travail. It was a time when the railroad was still unknown in India, let alone modern motorways and airways. The rich could, of course, ride on horses, but the humbler folk had to depend on the sturdiness of their own feet. Travel was difficult and arduous. The British had only recently conquered the Punjab, and stability was still to be established. The Great Mutiny was only a half decade away, but the people were growing restive, and the country was beginning to seethe with discontent. It was in such conditions that Jamal set forth for Amritsar. 3 days after reaching there, he was initiated by the Udasi Sadhu in a local garden into the science of the Gur Anhad. Like his contemporary, Sri Ramakrishna, 1836 to 1886, Jamal Singh was destined to sit at the feet of many intermediary masters before meeting his true one. Like him, he was destined to learn many a sadhana and make rapid headway in each. And like him, he was destined not to be bound like other yogis to any of them, but to press ever forward toward a higher and still higher goal. His early mastery of the Granth Sahib stood him in good stead. It worked as an infallible touchstone with which to test every new attainment and to know that his real goal lay still further ahead. Having practiced japa and pranayama, and having delved into the ecstasy of Gur Anhad, the quest for the secret of the five-worded word became Jamal's overmastering passion. While at Amritsar, he did not fail to contact other yogis and sadhus, questioning them for the clues of that which he sought. Someone suggested that he might discover the object of his search at the feet of Baba Gulab Das, then residing at the village of Chatiala. The boy needed no further prompting, and not long after was seeking permission of Gulab Das's disciple to see their master. The request was granted, and he appeared before the Reverend Sadhu. A lively discussion ensued, which, because of the newcomer's tender age, irritated some of the older disciples standing around. But Gulab Das assured them that Jamal, if young in years, was mature in mind and was a true seeker of God. He tried to satisfy the boy as best he could, explaining that Nam was no more than the sound of vibrating in the pranas, initiating him still further into the secrets of the pranva, or the pranic yoga. Jamal, though ready to learn whatever he could, was not convinced by the sadhu's interpretation, which, as he pointed out to him, failed to explain, A, the number five used time and again in the Granth Sahib in connection with the inner shabd, and B, the fact that Sikh gurus repeatedly asserted that the path of Nam was distinct from the other yogic forms which could not give the highest liberation. From Chatalia, Jamal's quest led him to Lahore. There were Hindu sadhus and Muslim fakirs of all descriptions there. The young Sikh had sought their company at all hours and incessantly mingled with them. But try as he might, he could discover no clue. Finding himself in a great city, having trudged many a mile, with no money in his pocket, hardly ever certain of his next meal, he was not a little discomfited with his predicament. He lived in the hope of solving the secret which none could unravel for him. Weary of foot and heavy of heart, he set out for Nankana Sahib, the birthplace of Guru Nanak, and a place of holy pilgrimage for the Sikhs. But at Nankana Sahib, Jamal failed once again to find what he wanted. The ways of providence are mysterious. A seeker's way may be cluttered with countless obstacles which may almost seem to break his heart. Yet at the very moment when the spirit is on the brink of collapse, it whispers a word of encouragement and flashes a ray of hope, saving him from the giant despair and putting on the road to New Jerusalem. And so the boy, now 15, met at Nankana Sahib by Jodha Singh, of the Namdhari sect, who directed him to Baba Balak Singh of Hasro, a village beyond Attock, in which later came to be known as the Northwestern Frontier Province. With undeterred resolution, Jamal set out on the long journey. He first halted at Aminabad, whence he proceeded to Shah Daula. From Shah Daula, his journey took him across the Jhelum River to Tila Balnath and thence to Rawalpindi. He spent a few days in each of these towns and never failed to get in touch with the fakirs and sadhus to be found there. Being not very far from Panja Sahib, the famous shrine marking one of Guru Nanak's most memorable miracles, he proceeded there, even if it lay somewhat off his route. There he sojourned for a while, enjoying the natural scenery and the clear water gushing from the sacred fount. He journeyed from there toward Attock, and at last arrived at Hasro, his destination. It is related in Guru Nanak's life that the great sage was touring the region with his devoted disciples, Bala and Mardana. The party was feeling exceedingly thirsty, and there seemed to be no trace of water around. The sage directed his followers to Wali Gandhari, a Muslim hermit who lived on the hillside by the side of a spring. The Wali, lost in his own pride, sent away the strangers empty-handed. When they returned again at their master's bidding, he scoffed, "If your guru is as great a man as you affirm, can't he even quench your thirst?" When these words were related to Nanak, who stood at the foot of the hill below, he smiled and struck the rock with his open hand. Straight away, a crystal jet burst forth, and everyone drank his fill. The Wali was full of remorse, but it was too late now, and to his consternation, he discovered that the spring that ran by his hut had suddenly dried up. The rock where the saint struck his hand still bears the imprint of his palm and fingers, and a clear stream of water sprouts from beneath. Is a great center of Sikh pilgrimage. He was very happy to meet the venerable Baba Balak Singh, who was impressed by the young visitor's keenness of mind and intensity of spiritual yearning. They passed some delightful days together reading, reciting, and discussing the Granth Sahib. Balak Singh was a man of great wisdom and piety, but as far as spirituality was concerned, he, like Gulab Das, was only conversant with japa through prana, and knew little of the Panch Shabdi Nam spoken of by Kabir and the great Sikh Gurus. However, he gave his young friend hope and directed him to Chikir, to a householder Sikh of great spiritual eminence. Jamal arrived from Hasro in the village of Chikir and began inquiring for the man he sought. He seemed to find no clue till he met an old retired Sikh who had asked the young stranger if he could assist him in any way. Jamal related from where he had come and the object of his quest, and asked to be guided to the local saint. The old gentleman, who was himself the man he sought, kindly replied that no such saint lived in that village as far as he knew, but offered to do for him whatever little lay in his power. Jamal's long and exacting search now at last began to yield some fruit. The householder Mahatma, at whose home he now found himself, gave him the first definite clues of what he sought and put him on the first rung of the spiritual ladder. Shortly after his arrival, the God-intoxicated boy received initiation. His earlier assumptions were confirmed, and he now knew it for certain that the path of Nam had little to do with other yogic practices. But after initiation, he pointed out that the scripture spoke of the five-worded word, and he had been imparted only two. On hearing this, his host and preceptor relayed to him the story of his own initiation. It was many years ago that I went to Peshawar. There I met a great Mahatma and wished to be initiated by him. He accepted me as a disciple and unlocked to me the mystery of the first two Shabdas, bidding me to come back again as early as possible. I proceeded to my village and intended to return soon, but such are the traps of Maya that I was unable, due to some unexpected piece of business, to fulfill my wish. 2 months went by in this way, and when I did at last reach Peshawar, my master had passed away, taking with him the key to the remaining phases of the divine Nam. In the past, it was common practice with mystics to initiate their disciples by degrees into the inner science. After the sadhak had mastered one stage, He was acquainted with the mysteries of the next, and so on to the end. The method was not in itself objectionable, but it often led to results of the kind we have just noted. Jamal was to meet another case like that of the Chikir Mahatma a few years later at Delhi. After being initiated by Swamiji at Agra, when he met a Muslim fakir who too had suffered by the early death of his peer. To avoid such mishaps, masters of the Surat Shabd Yoga nowadays initiate their disciples directly into the mysteries of the five inner planes, and the soul has to traverse before it can merge with the Absolute. Jamal had no choice. He had to be content with what he got. He stayed on with the Sikh Mahatma for some time, enjoying his hospitality and inspiring company insidiously, cultivating the gift he had received. Then a day arrived when he bade his latest teacher a touching farewell and set forth for Peshawar to pursue his unfulfilled quest. He had the satisfaction of being put on the right road, but he was not the man to rest till he had attained his goal. At this ancient frontier city, he once again, like a keen huntsman, began seeking the trail of some man full of God realization. But Peshawar was not the place where his quest was to be crowned with success and his thirst satiated. While wandering among the Pathans through its many streets, a Mastana Sikh, lost to the everyday world of rational behavior by divine intoxication, stopped him and accosted him with the words, "Why do you expand your labors in the north when your day is to dawn from the east?" Though he could extract nothing more from the strange counselor, his advice drove him, and soon after Jamal began retracing his steps to the Punjab. On reaching Rawalpindi, he decided to visit the famous Kashmir Valley in the popular hill resort of Muri. A lover of nature's beauties, he greatly enjoyed his hilly tour, and in Kashmir met many a sadhu. His sightseeing over, he finally turned homeward. With tatters on his back and barely any shoes on his feet or money in his pocket, he at last reached Guman, to the great joy of his fond mother and his affectionate brothers. The family celebrated the homecoming in traditional style, offering thanksgiving to the Almighty, arranging scriptural recitations, and the singing of hymns. Distributing sweets among the neighbors and offering food to the poor, Jamal Singh was now 16, took up the family duties once more, and gave himself up to the consolidation of what he had learned in his recent itinerary. Soon after his return, the Sathyali Yoga, who had initiated him into pranayama 3 years earlier, arrived. True to his parting promise at Guman to see his young disciple, Jamal Singh received him with reverence and humility, and his former teacher offered to instruct him in the other practices of traditional yoga. But the youth was no longer a child. His wide travels and the varied accompanying experiences had given him a new maturity. What had seemed desirable once no longer seemed of much value, for his contact with many a yogi had convinced him of one thing at least. The kriyas of Hatha Yoga might give strange physical and occult powers, but they could not bestow full inner peace and freedom. Every fresh day only strengthened his old conviction that the path of complete mukti, or emancipation, lay some other way, and all that he now sought was initiation into the mystique of the Panth Shabd. Time rolled on in its mercury wheels, but Jamal Singh was not the man to sit idle or be content with only the second best. Awake, arise, and stop, not until the goal is reached, enjoined an ancient Vedic text, and his life was a living embodiment to this precept. Barely 8 months had elapsed since his return when the urge to resume his quest for the holy Nam became too powerful to be resisted, and he began pressing his mother for permission to set out once more. "How can you expect me to let you go again? You were a child then, but now you are a grown man, and understand your responsibilities. Ah, mother, at my birth you prayed for a saintly son, then why stop me now? How can you talk this way? Have I ever checked you in your religious inclinations? Surely you can pursue your devotional practices and spiritual disciplines while living at home. How can godliness and worldliness go together? But you yourself have seen how others have encroached upon our lands after your father's death. We barely get enough to eat, and when you are gone, your brothers being so young, but will prevent them from forcibly occupying the rest. Let them take whatever they will. This world is not ours, and even if these lands are not taken away from us, we will have to leave them someday when our lifespan is over. We have only to sustain ourselves. What matters if all property is lost? The Lord has given us sinewy arms, and with his grace we shall earn a respectable living. He whom nothing could dissuade yet, while yet a child, could not be deterred now, and Bibi Daya had no choice but to let him go. Thus, at the age of 16 years and 9 months, Jamal Singh once again set out on his spiritual explorations, having well nigh exhausted the Punjab in the northwest, and the words of the Peshawar Sikh still reverberating in his ears. He bent his footsteps eastward. At this time, I will stop the reading, and I will pick up the next time when we're reading from Master's great book, Baba Jamal, his life and teachings. Thank you, Father, for this blessed time to spend with you and reading your beautiful words. We pray, as always, to live up to what you ask of us. Amen.
Thank you, Scott, for reading this for us. There were 79 of us in today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So God, in man, unites us in such a relation which never broken, even after leaving the body. So we have to just judge how far we have gone. There is no question of high or low, you see, rich or poor. You see? Who have done it?